This is Living Lab on the Point. I'm Heather Goldstone. We're talking today about data. The word data used to be a dry technical term, reserved largely for the scientist who generated and analyzed the stuff. No more. In this era of big data, each and every one of us is the source, and some would argue owner, of reams of data. Where we live, how much we exercise, what kind of healthcare we get, what we've bought and read online, all could end up as part of a massive database somewhere ripe for the picking. That can be cause for concern or excitement, depending on your point of view and who's doing the picking. It could be an internet provider trying to place the right ads for you to see, or a scientist trying to cure cancer, or a journalist trying to root out corruption. Later this hour, we'll talk with three journalists about the ways in which reporters are turning to the world of science for methodology rather than subject matter. Call it data journalism, or computational journalism, or scientific journalism. We'll explore all of those. First, though, let's get a handle on big data itself, what it is and what we can and can't do with it. For that, we turn to Elizabeth Bruce, co-founder and executive director of the Big Data Initiative at MIT. She actually spent a summer here in Woods Hole early in her academic career before turning to the world of cloud computing, robotics, biomedical innovation, and all things big data. Also, Nathan Wilson, technical director for the Encyclopedia of Life, an interactive online database of life on Earth, currently with more than 1 million pages. Nathan came to Woods Hole from Hollywood, and believe it or not, in both places his focus was the same, fostering online collaboration around large data sets. Nathan Wilson, Elizabeth Bruce, welcome to Living Lab.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Now, Elizabeth Bruce, let's start with just the basics. Is there a definition for big data?
Well, there is not one definition, and certainly a lot of people will say that big data is a very vague term. However, I will put forward a definition. I really think big data is about prediction and about using data to make better decisions based on these predictions.
So isn't that something that could be done with any amount of data? Where does the big part come in?
Sure. So absolutely. People argue that, certainly small data plays a role, and we've been using data for years and years and years. So what's new about big data? So I'll say two things. One, big data is really, for me, a convergence of multiple technology trends that have been going on for a long time. First of all, there's this digitization of information across all these different aspects of our life, whether we're talking about our medical records, the way we shop and what we buy, our banking. There's just massive digitization of all this information that can then be stored and, of course, then processed or analyzed to pull out interesting patterns. Second, we have this availability of these really cheap or inexpensive sensors. So you think about your smartphone and all the sensors, location-based sensors, can embed sensors in so many places that we never could before. The third thing is access to cheap computation. So here we have this, you might call it cloud computing, but really this ability of scalable compute really on demand. So you put those three things together, and I think you sort of end up with this trend that's happening now, big data. We're able to process, store, manage, merge, and analyze sort of a scale of data that we've never been able to do before.
So big data is basically an unprecedented ability to generate, store, and analyze digital information.
Correct. And I think early on you sort of saw from the technology people this focus on what they said was the three V's. So what makes big data new, exciting, and what's hard about big data is they call it volume, variety, and velocity, right? Volume, it's not just, it's sized, okay? People start comparing terabytes, gigabytes, exabytes, petabytes of data. So you have this volume of data. You have variety, which is now we're talking about combining all kinds of different data. So it's not just numbers, but we're talking about combining images, text, all these different kinds of structured and unstructured data types. And then the third B is what people refer to as velocity, which is really the speed at which data is coming at us and our ability to process the data so quickly and make decisions much, much more quickly than we have in the past.
Now, Nathan Wilson, you arguably work in the world of big data. You oversee Encyclopedia of Life, this website with over a million pages and all sorts of data embedded in each of those pages. And yet you kind of take issue with this term big data. What is it that you don't like about that term or that kind of lumping together of different sorts of data?
Well, I agree with everything that Elizabeth has said in terms of what's changing. What I don't like is the clumping together of these different problems that really have to do with very different types of data. So in the case of something like the Encyclopedia of Life, all of that data is freely available, we want people to get access to it. There's a lot of data out there that we don't necessarily want people to get access to, and those can vary in size. There's also differences between the types of data, whether they're very regular sort of sensor data, vast quantities of sort of small regular data, as opposed to the heterogeneous type of data that you get when describing organisms, for example, in the Encyclopedia of Life.
So give us some examples in terms of the differences between different data sets and how that would change the challenges to maybe kind of challenge this idea that all sorts of big data fit into one mold.
Sure. So if you look at some of the things that have been popular recently in the news, so things like phone records, metadata about phone records, that's very regular data. You know who's connected to who, essentially. You know dates, times, things like that. Very regular data that you're searching for to understand a particular problem. If you compare that to something like trait data for organisms, that can be very mixed. Different people record them in different ways, will mean different things, will mean subtly different things about what a particular data point means or a particular data set means. What's called the ontology that structures the data can be very, very different. And so those provide much more challenging problems, in my view, to resolve under smaller data sets. Whereas the large data sets, the sort of flood of sensor data or things like that, they have their own distinct problems. And so what my concern is that big data is being used as a term to lump all of these things together that don't really belong together. So if you have something like, a funding call for big data, the proposals you're going to get in are going to vary widely across where they fit into that spectrum, and being able to compare them is almost going to be meaningless.
Right. So you're arguing the tools that you would use, say, to analyze words would be very different from the tools you would use to analyze a large batch of numbers, or
exactly.
That lumping those all together is not really valid. Elizabeth Bruce, are there computational tools that do span the variety and diversity of big data? Are there unifying tools there?
Unifying tools, there are. I think what I'm seeing, at places like MIT, where you have researchers that are developing kind of the next generation of databases or machine learning algorithms, is that there are kind of a class of interesting problems, creating new tools that will let us process, really big data sets, but also really diverse. So we kind of touched a little bit on this sort of kind of complexity, a variety of types of data. So I think there's a lot of interest in combining data sets that have never been combined before. And so there's definitely, I'm seeing in the research side, new kinds of like machine learning approaches to, say, integrating data sets that have never been integrated. So you come up with really hard problems, like you're talking about, how do I know that this thing in this database actually refers to the same thing in this database, and how can I combine them? Right now, a lot of times that's done manually by someone who has that knowledge and can kind of reconcile, differences across different data sets. I think that when you come to scale, like in big data, you really are looking at a whole new kind of class of tools that would allow you, that kind of manual combining of data sets is not scalable. And so for big data, I think researchers are looking at powerful new tools that will use things like machine learning to combine data sets.
So we kind of need to teach computers to have some aspects of human intelligence, but also have the speed of the computers.
Exactly. And it's hard. It's very hard. So I think what Nathan was getting at is there's a lot in, people who've collected the data know a lot about the data. How do you sort of scale that to big data? That is a really hard problem. So knowing that two different kinds, they may be referred to as different things in different data sets. How do you know that that name is the same in both data sets? What's the intention? Those are hard problems.
Now, where do we stand kind of in the progression of this big data era? Are we still basically trying to develop the tools, or are there examples where we're already learning from these very large data sets?
I think there are definitely cases where we're learning from these data sets. I mean, that's why we're doing this.
Give us an example.
But more and more questions come up. trying to think of a great example off the top of my head. Image processing is a good example. So things like facial recognition software, things like that. There's amazing things that have been going on there. You can even, you know, just get for the home stuff that runs through all of your, you know, gigabytes and gigabytes of images and pulls out faces and recognizes people reasonably well. And I'm sure the people who are trying to do facial recognition for, you know, whatever other purposes have much more sophisticated mechanisms. But those are being used successfully. But the interesting thing is that more and more questions come as you get more and more of this data. And there are, you know, problems that are known to be almost impossible to solve that also fit into very small amounts of data. So it's a really heterogeneous place. And it really, in my view, depends deeply on what the data is and what the problem is that you're trying to solve.
I guess to challenge that, I would almost say that facial recognition is a tool. I mean, it's great that I can go into my collections of photos on my computer and sort out the pictures of my three different kids. But we don't necessarily learn something about the world from that. It seems more like a tool that we're still waiting for. What's the question we could answer using that?
Well, I guess go ahead.
I was just going to say, so there's a lot of hype around big data, and certainly, like Nathan was saying, you know, you put big data on the front of your research proposal and maybe you have more of a chance getting in. But I think that we are really just at the beginning. And I know from, you know, the research side in terms of building new powerful tools, there's some really hard problems. I mean, combining data, sort of being able to figure out how to manage and store all this data, there's some interesting research problems there. I want to come back to the example. I can give you one. We have a number of projects going on that you might consider big data projects at MIT. I'll just give you an example of one that's going on right now that's in the medical space. So this is a group at CSAIL, which is the Computer Science and AI Lab at MIT, in the data-driven medical group. And they are looking at something called healthcare-associated infections. So I think there's, like, associated with $20 billion in healthcare costs annually. And so an example is, say, you get checked into a hospital and you acquire an infection, so something like called C. diff, or it's a bacterial infection that you can get, and those are spread easily in hospital situations. And so I think there's a huge risk, and what this group is doing is they're actually going in and collecting a ton of data. So this can be from the patient medical record, data collected inside the hospitals, even everything from what rooms they stay in, what nurses, doctors they interact with, and pulling all of these different variables, now thousands of variables together, analyzing that data using new machine learning algorithms, building a model based on these thousands of variables, and then doing a much better job of identifying patient risk scores and identifying these patient populations that are at a higher risk, and then, of course, the hospital can then treat them differently. So I think ultimately that's getting at a new model for lowering the risk of getting these and spreading these infections, which I think is very, you know, in this case, saving lives and hopefully also reducing costs.
I mean, that's a clear example of, you know, one of the possible benefits of having all this kind of information. But on the flip side of that, you're talking about having access to a huge number of people's medical records. And there's a lot of concern, I think, around big data. You know, sometimes you see comparisons as big data, big brother. Talk a little bit about the concerns and how founded are concerns or fears about big data.
So certainly there is this kind of big data privacy. I think that there's a lot of people are excited thinking about big data and the potential to have an impact and change lives and improve our lives on a big scale, whether it's medical, transportation, education. There's a lot of optimism and sort of promise of big data. I think absolutely there are serious concerns about privacy, and this is something that I think we're really beginning to have a public dialogue about. And I think that there are clearly, when it comes to medical records, there are policies in place, HIPAA, that governs the use of private personal information and how it gets used, whether for research or for any other purposes. And those policies are still in place. And any research that gets done will go and fall under HIPAA. Now, using, you know, when it comes to big data, I think what's interesting is this concern about combining data sets that have never been combined before, and sort of, you know, concern that you may be disclosing or revealing something unintentional. I think going forward, this is something that we need to pay a lot of attention to, how personal information is used. And I think that people, you know, the sort of clear consent. So as a patient, I may be completely comfortable with sharing certain aspects of my medical history if it can contribute to, say, curing cancer or providing better cancer care for other people. So I think that that's something that we are really beginning to have a dialogue around. What are the policies, what are the sort of regulations around how we kind of manage and govern the use of personal information.
Now, Nathan Wilson, I want to go back to this idea that addressing some of these very large-scale questions requires essentially the best of both the human brain and what computers can do. Can online collaboration, getting large numbers of people together through online tools, help to address that?
I believe so. I think one of the big key new innovations that's come, it's not that new, but relatively new, is the ability to get large groups of people working together in synchrony on a problem. Many eyes make problems easier when you're trying to dig into this data and trying to pull out particular solutions, because a lot of different minds are going on, a lot of different thought is going on. One of the things I think is key to success in these areas is really quality engineering, because they can stumble across issues that make it difficult for the collaboration to continue, and challenges along those lines, and make it hard to access the data that you need to access and that kind of thing. So I'm really excited about the whole crowdsourcing world and getting people engaged in understanding these problems, getting them providing data both and processing that data and understanding it better, and bringing that human touch to the data, because a lot of the stuff that you do when you automatically process things, the stuff you get out the other end may not be that useful and may not be that meaningful. But unless you close that loop and have people actually applying understanding and trying to understand the problems that are trying to be solved, unless you have that full loop, you don't really get a lot of progress.
Well, and we've been talking about how difficult these problems are. Do the people involved in analyzing it, you know, through these crowdsourcing or whatever, can that be just anyone? Or do you think people need to have some sort of essentially advanced training or technical training to be able to work with the data in a meaningful way?
Again, it totally depends on the problem. So there are things that anybody can do that are things that computers can't do well yet. Image recognition, speech analysis, things like that are very challenging for computers to do, and humans can do that very effectively. And anyone can do those. On the other hand, there are things like identification of organisms, for example, based on the data that you see, like insect identification. That requires expert knowledge and expert understanding of how those organisms live and what the concepts are and things like that, and requires a great deal of information. But there's a whole whole blend going from things that anybody can do, like the old data, old weather project is a great example of something where anybody can go in, read a weather log, and basically key in what's in that weather log, because it's not reasonable to get a computer to do that. And then you have all the extremes going up.
All right. Nathan Wilson, Technical Director of the Encyclopedia of Life. Elizabeth Bruce, Co-Founder and Executive Director of MIT's Big Data Initiative. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take a short break here. When we come back, we'll talk big data, scientific method, and the future of journalism. Stay with us.